and welcome to minute 50 of season 8 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week and hit the milestone episode of 50 episodes is Nick Rehack of the Rabbit Hole Podcasting Network. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you for having me. I can't believe it's been 4 episodes up and now about to be a 5th one, and I feel like we just started and it's already come to an end.
Yeah, well, there's always next season.
That is true. That is true. I wonder what we'll watch.
I have no idea. I have no idea what next season will be, but you know.
I got one or two guesses.
No, you don't.
Okay.
All right. Because as of now, it doesn't look like I'm going in that direction. But we'll see. Ooh, okay. We'll see. All right. We shall see. All right. So minute 50 begins with Upham showing us that he is clearly scared, and ends with Hill just continuing to complain. So we finished things off yesterday with the men getting ready to finally move forward in the little town of Newville. And Miller basically told Upham to stay as close to Horvath as possible. Horvath decides to wear Upham. And this minute begins with Horvath basically saying to Upham, stay with me. And, you know, at this point, it's really funny because you can see that it's for basically even just a second. Upham is pretty much hugging Horvath, you know, really encroaching on his space.
Yeah, just and he's just okay with it. He's like, yeah, I get it.
Exactly.
I feel like anybody else would put up with it, but he's just like, all right.
That's right. But again, we've talked about this before. Horvath has a wedding ring. So we know that he's a family man, I guess you can say. So it's, I guess it's the idea of, okay, maybe he's taking care of one of his kids. Maybe he looks at it from that perspective.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, it's possible. You know, there's no way of knowing that for sure, but that's the way that it looks.
I like that, though. I like that idea.
And then, you know, after we see them there, the scene changes and we see the men move forward. With Hill leading the way through the rubble and debris of this little town, the men are sort of keeping a little bit of a distance from one another. Probably not enough, but they're still trying to keep their distance. But we can see that Hill is walking pretty funnily as he's walking, and then he crouches down and Miller comes up to him and basically says, "All right. Past the end of the block to the left. Those are the gates to the square." And Miller responds, "Good." You know, I like the fact that, these two men are sort of bonding together with this whole thing, trying to see where, working together in order to try and make it through this part of the danger zone, I guess, that they're going through. You know, that type of thing. So I like the way that they do that.
Yeah, because it's like a montage, but it's not a montage at the same time. Because there are those skip edits. It's not like it's just one fluid shot, but it feels like there's such a grand passage of time. Even though there's not.
Correct. And, you know, as the two of them are conversing, we see the other men start to get closer. And, you know, Hill then stands up and continues with the lead. And the men all, move little by little to go through it. And then out of nowhere, Upham, is no longer next to Horvath. And he crouches down next to Ryben and goes, "Hey, Ryben, where's the captain from?" And he turns to him and goes, "You figure that one out, you got yourself a nice prize." Why is Upham so fixated on that? Like, why does it really, they're in the middle of, enemy territory, however you want to look at it. And he doesn't care. You know, what's more important to him is the information about Miller. You know, we just saw a few seconds ago how scared he was, but here he's no longer scared. And he's asking, about, where do you think he's from? So I don't know. I it just, to me, it seems just very strange that he's trying to find this out.
I think it's just he's Miller's the one that picked him out. Like, he literally went to, and he was like, you, and he's like, come on, let's go. And he just wants to, I guess, know who his new boss is, or he's just still a people person. Like, he's still just getting to know everybody. I feel like in his previous group, he wasn't really like super close with everybody. But now that he's getting close with everybody here, he knows a little bit about everybody, but knows next to nothing about Miller. So it's like, all right, he's my next guy. And then asking about him to kind of, you know, chum up to him. Everyone's like, I got no idea. They're like, what do you mean? It's like, well.
Yeah, I see your point on that, but I mean, again, he was in a group of map readers beforehand. You know, they had stuff to bond over. They would bond over the map reading, I guess. I don't know. there must have been something for them to bond over.
It had to have been.
Yeah, but it's just I just find it very strange how he's so adamant in trying to find out like what's the deal with Miller here. Now that's the thing that bothers me. I mean, again, we know he's a writer. We know that he's trying to get information for his book about Bond of Brothers and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. It's just really strange that I mean, again, next week he's going to talk more about this and stuff like that. I don't know. It's, to me, it's just a very strange interlude to have him do this. But, yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah. At that point, yeah, oh, well.
Exactly. There's not much I can do about that. That's just the way it is. And, at this point, Jackson chimes in and goes, $300, last I heard. So, first of all, that's a very interesting amount to discuss. Okay, so $300 from 1944, how much do you think it's worth today in the end of 2024?
I would say like $750, $800.
$300 from 1944 is worth almost $5,400.
Huh?
Yes.
Get no. What?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It is a inflation rate of 1,693.5%.
Oh, that's horrible.
I mean, the exact number is 5,380.64.
Sheesh. Yeah, not a fan.
Again, it's been 80 years, so what do you expect?
I mean, unfortunately, yeah.
You know. And so at this point, Mellish chimes in and says, company's got a pool, $5 gets you in. So, okay, if it's $300, so how many men contributed to that?
That's what would you say? I was wondering. If it's that point, right, and it's like $5 a guy, and they say it's over 300, or it's at 300.
They say it's $300 last I heard.
Yeah, like that's just – but then again, we find out through context clues he's been there for what? Like 2 years he's been on duty now? So
something like that, yeah.
Is it something that like – how do other people know about it? Right? Is it one of those, like, he started out with all of these guys, and then they all died off, and then someone new came on, and he even tells us later on in the film, too, that he's lost 94 guys, so mm-hmm. Is it just 94 guys that have come through, like, is it one company, and they just, like, keep getting new people, like, coming in and out and swinging?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way they do it. They do get new men each time, for yeah. Sure. They
I would have to bring be, them... and then are there higher-ups involved? Like, do some of the majors and others, you know, want to know, or do they just not care? Or, you know, like, it just becomes really interesting because we don't have to, but it has us play with the logistics. But I think they also have a number like that to be like, wow, a lot of people don't know about this guy. Do we even really know who this guy is? Because he could be a real, like, just nightmare human being, and this is his one place to be like, actually, I'm a nice guy. Hey, I'm decent. Like,
That's true. And again, I mean, they have a pool, but what does the pool mean? Is it that, you know, it's do they keep going over to Miller and say, okay, someone thinks that you're a farmer. No. Ah, okay. You lost your $5. You know, that, okay. Like, how does that work? And maybe. And again, who's holding on to the cash? You know, if he's lost 94 men and by $100, let's just say it's a round number, even though it's probably not because it's around 300. Okay, but 300, I mean, 60 men would have taken part in it. Okay, yeah. What are the odds that the 60 men that took part of it, like, what percentage of them are no longer alive? You know, so it's, mm-hmm. you know, and but later on when they have the conversation and Miller says, tell you, it will split the money. So if that's the case, then, you know, I don't know. Time they come to Miller and say, okay, we think that you're a postman. You work for FedEx. I mean, you know, like, there are different things that they could throw out there.
Started it too. Like, who's the one that came up with the initial idea? That's right. They even stole.
That's right. No way of knowing. Now, if you do the math, so I said that there are approximately 60 men that put their money in. So based on inflation, okay, and let's see how good your memory is with the number that I said that $300 is worth today. How much is the equivalent that each of these 60 men put into the pool? Okay, in the movie they put in $5. If they were to put that same $5 in today, what would it be worth? How much would each of them be putting into this pool?
You said it was like 1,000-some-odd percent, so it's got to be $203.
It was more. It's more, but yeah.
Okay, way more than 5,000.
No, I'm talking. It was no the number. The number. Okay, now you're gonna just do the math. I was trying to make you guess. The $300 is worth $5,380. Okay. Mm-hmm. Which basically means that if we were to use that math backwards and say, okay, there are 60 men that have given you know, that have given money into it, each of them gave the equivalent of $90 today.
Oh, you know, I think I heard you wrong in my head and I was clearly doing the math wrong, but it's still a lot of money. Like, that's still a lot of money to just guess at something. That's, I would, right, put a dollar in a jar and see if I can guess how many jelly beans are in the jar. I would do so, but I'm not gonna go, hey Nick, how many jelly beans are in the jar? I don't know, here's $90 for me to guess at it. Like, get out of here.
Exactly.
Yes, that's grocery money, that's bills money. If my wife found out, oh, hey, I thought we were going to go out to dinner tonight and, you know, maybe shop afterwards. Actually, we're not, because I took a guess and was wrong.
I guessed what Lieutenant Miller, well, Captain Miller does for a living.
Yeah, and I was wrong.
And we're not going to have groceries this week because of that.
No, nope, not this week.
Exactly. And then at this point, you know, we see Wade in the back, basically helping a wounded guy along, which now makes more sense, the comment from yesterday, you know, where he said, Wade, get everyone together, meaning, you know, get your guys ready. Meaning Wade was taking care of the, you know, the men from the 101 that were injured, that were with Hill. And so he's the one who's carrying them. So it's just, it's a very interesting that you can see in the background that Wade is helping along one of these guys that's wounded, who has like bandages on him and stuff like that. So I like the way that they, you know, just give us a little bit of a glimpse at that, you know, about how that works.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, we hear Wade go, easy. And then Hill says, it's around this corner, definitely right up to those gates. And then we're back to, you know, Upham with his question. He goes, somebody must know where he's from, what he did for a living. Again, they're in the middle of going through Newville, and this is what's concerning our friend Upham. And then Mike actually pipes in and goes, I've been with him since Kasserine Pass. But I don't have a clue. Now, I got to tell you, I don't know if I believe that.
I don't believe that either, because, A, it sounds like something that's made up, and Upham would just go, oh, yeah, okay. But I think Mike's the one that's got the money.
Okay, that's very possible.
If any of them, he's the one that's, I think, most trustworthy. Not most trustworthy, but, you know, he and the captain, they have a very different relationship than the other guys do. And I think he would be, like, responsible enough, I think.
Correct. Okay, so do you know where the Battle of Kasserine Pass was? Or when it was?
Nope, I don't know either of those things.
Okay, so it was a battle in North Africa in Tunisia on February 26, 1943, which means this is about 16 months, afterwards. So he and Mike have been together for a while. Yeah, they've been together for probably about a year and a half at this point. You know, with the whole thing. I mean, the battle took place between February 19th and 24th in Tunisia. And who won? Who do you think won? The Axis or the Allies?
The Axis.
And you would be correct.
Right. And I'm only saying that because it's character talked about how he lost like 94 guys. And I'm thinking like maybe that's where some of them were. So.
Well, let's put it this way. The U.S. casualties during this battle, remember, it's a four-day battle, they lost 3,300 men that were killed or wounded. They had 3,000 that were captured as POWs. They lost 183 tanks. Compared to what the Germans lost 989 men killed or wounded, which, again, is less than a third of what the Allies lost. They captured 608 German soldiers as opposed to the 3,000 POWs from the US side. The Germans lost 20 tanks as opposed to 183 tanks. I mean, again, this is just
it's a lot. That's nine times.
Mm-hmm. Nine times. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
It's funny. What just happened is the reverse of what happens in my life. I'll be at work and someone will say nine times and I'll go, nine times, just like that. And this is the first time in a long time where someone's hit me with that. And oh, that brought me so much joy. I appreciate that, Rob.
Would you like to tell everyone where that quote is from?
That quote is from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
That's right.
And I can't think of the actor's name. I could see his face.
Jeffrey Jones.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my
God. Nine times as he's saying it, he's watching the numbers go down.
Just slowly drop the phone and then has to get his secretary.
Grace!
Big fan.
Yes. You see, we're kindred spirits, Nick. You know that.
It's almost like we're simpatico. You ever see that movie in theaters?
Of course. When it came out. I saw it when it came out in the theater. I was 11.
Wow. Okay.
But yeah.
They did a revival screening, if you will, a couple years ago, and the wife had never seen it, so we went and saw it on the big screen. It was so much fun. It's such a – what a fun movie.
Nine times. I've seen it more than nine times.
10 times.
No, that number goes much higher.
12 times.
I don't think you'll guess it that quickly.
42 times.
I couldn't even tell you how many times. That's part of the problem.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I've seen it a lot. So Mike is once again emphasizing the fact that nobody knows anything about Miller. But again, I don't believe Mike. I think Mike's lying. That's what I think. I think Mike has more of an idea than everyone else, but he doesn't care about he doesn't want to put his 90 bucks into the pot.
Yeah, probably so. Not. Well, I'm willing to bet too, because, and I apologize, we keep jumping ahead and I know you're going to cover it at that time, but Hanks talks to Upham about you know, his wife and the rose garden and everything. And he
no,
was like,
then he talks about, he doesn't talk to him about that. He tells that to Ryan.
That's right, Ryan. Because that's right. And then he's like, "Tell me about it." He's like, "No, that's for me." And it's like, "Oh, okay. So maybe this is one of those things where maybe Mike does know a thing or two more than he lets on." So I like your theory.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad you like my theory. And then you know, we see Hill continuing to walk through the streets here, and we see that he's out of pain. He's griping about his ankle and stuff like that. And he says, "My ankles are killing me. I'll need a wheelchair before this war is over."
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. Oh my God. Because got ankles like an old woman. Like an old, and then he gets cut off. So I do like the fact that you know, he's basically whining like an old grandma here.
Yeah, because it brings that brevity back. Because there's a little bit of that lightheartedness. We get it towards the beginning, you know, where he's like, you know, Dagwood, Dusseldorf. Then it gets really intense. But then coming out of it, yeah, they're running around in the rain and everything. But they're talking about there's a pot to figure out who's got what or who knows what. And then he, you know, joking around about his ankles and stuff like that's and like you mentioned earlier in the week, too, it harkens back to why he was kind of walking the way he was earlier because of what he's got going on.
That's right. That's right. Which, again, people will have to come back next week to find out what he thinks his problem is. You know, we'll have to figure that out. But he mentions a wheelchair, that he's going to need a wheelchair before the war is over. So what do you know about the history of a wheelchair?
Ooh, I'm sure that started back in BC times. And that it didn't really come into more use until maybe around like war times. I'm sure it was like first it was more of a cart and they would pull people around on a cart or a small wagon. And then it slowly came to chair size. Obviously, one of the more famous wheelchair bound people. You have Stephen Hawking. You have Christopher Reeves of the second half of his life. You have Franklin D. Roosevelt. Eventually, they became mechanized. And you can control them with your hand, or as with Stephen Hawking, like he's got like a valve. No, not him, but there's other ones you can control with like your mouth as a valve kind of thing and eye stuff. So not enough, but enough to be like, okay, it sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, as you said, it goes back really, really far about when they would use like wheeled furniture and stuff like that. But the idea of using it to transport people who are injured or disabled only basically started around the second or third century BC in China, where they started using it. They would actually use you know, early forms of wheelbarrows to move people, and also use it to move heavy objects.
Makes sense.
But it took a long time for them to specifically create chairs to move people around, which the earliest dated I guess inscriptions that they found and stuff like that is from 525 AD. But this was in China. When do you think they started thinking about doing this type of stuff with similar designs in Europe?
Say 1200s.
It would be the 16th, the late 16th century in Spain.
Wow. Okay.
Where an inventor built a wheelchair for King Philip II.
Okay.
It wasn't very efficient, and you needed to have someone to push it. You couldn't do it on his own. So they say that it feels more like a high chair or a portable throne than a wheelchair at the time.
Okay.
The first self-propelling chair was created in 1655 by a paraplegic watchmaker named Stephen Farfeller, who was 22 years old and created the first self-propelling chair in order for him to, you know, use cranks and cogwheels in order to be able to move around and stuff like that, where he could use his hands to move around.
Cogs makes sense. I feel like that's something that we don't really use anymore. I think anymore it's like serpentine belts or pulleys or levers and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the technology became more in use in the late 1700s, around 17, stuff like that. But the term wheelchair, which was known as a rolling chair, was first introduced in 1887 in Atlantic City. So that tourists who were invalids were able to actually enjoy the boardwalk.
And gamble.
And at this point, a lot of healthy people would rent them also in order to be able to, have servants push them as a show that they, that they're the power that they have and stuff like that. In 1933, that's when they started creating lightweight steel portable wheelchairs. It was created by a man named Harry Jennings for his friend Herbert Everest, who had broken his back in a mining accident. And they both saw the potential of the invention, the business potential of the invention, and they became the first mass marketing manufacturers of wheelchairs, and they would call it the X-Brace design. Which is something that's still used nearly 100 years later.
Hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Correct. Correct. Right. So that's what I have about wheelchairs.
I like that.
Me too.
Because now we know just a little bit more.
That's right. Knowledge is an important thing. Nine times. that's all I have to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute or the movie in general?
About the minute, no, but I will say about the movie in general, as tough a watch as it can be, this is a film that definitely jumped up in my estimation. I've just kind of not forgetting how good it is, but just underestimating it as I might have before. This film is so powerful. It is much more than meets the eye, I feel. And
it's a like transformer. I said
before, it nearly a transformer. Nearly a transformer. But I can't thank you enough again for having me on, because that got me to rewatch this. And it's kind of reinvigorating my love of film. For a little while, I've been stagnant a little bit lately, just with like wanting to go watch films and wanting to just see anything, and having this is kind of that nice kick in the rear to be like, get back to doing what you enjoy. And I enjoy watching films, and this was a film that I absolutely enjoyed watching. And just, you know, thank you for the inadvertent kick in the rear.
No problem. I'm willing to kick you in the rear 5,000 miles away. did you get your
nine times?
Nine times. That's right. Did you get your wife to watch it with you, or she's not into these type of movies?
I told her I was going to watch a movie. She's like, you can watch it without me. And then the next day I tell her what I watched. She's like, oh, I've never seen it before. And I was like, I wanted you to watch this movie. She's like, well, you should have told me what you were watching. I'm like, I did tell you what I was watching. So she'll watch it at some point.
I have a hint. You can watch it again.
That's true.
You know, you're allowed to watch the movie even when you're not preparing to talk about it, on a podcast.
That's true. That is true.
Even now, it's the best time. You know, as soon as we finish recording today, go to your wife and say, I just finished talking about Saving Private Ryan. I want you to watch it with me now. Yeah.
And then when certain things happen, like Goldman, you know what's interesting about the name Goldman?
There you go. Hey, they have he says a wheelchair. Do you know the history of wheelchairs?
He's nine clicks over. Nine.
Nine times. That's right.
I have a feeling I know what the next movie is going to be.
No, someone's already done it. Sorry. It's already been done. Sorry. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Been done. Yeah. That's okay. It's interesting that you have a feeling of what the next movie is, even though I have no clue. So, we'll have to. So tell me when you figure it out.
I will.
Okay, you do that. All right, so every Friday we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will talk about their top five Steven Spielberg directed movies. He has a few. You know, it's a few more than what we had with John McTiernan. So you have a little, you can go a little deeper.
Yeah.
You know, by trying to figure out what your top five Spielberg directed movies are. So why don't you once again start with your number five and work your way up?
So the number five film I have is Saving Private Ryan. This film, like I said, just blew me away. So it jumped up very high in my estimation. Number four, Lost World, Jurassic Park. That's right. Not Jurassic Park, Lost World, Jurassic Park.
I think Jay might stop being your friend with that one.
Oh, he's we've spoken. And he has told me time and time again how very wrong I am.
Oh, okay. All right. As long as you're aware of the fact that you're wrong.
Oh, I'm aware.
From Jay's perspective.
From many people, but a lot from Jay. So number four, Lost World, Jurassic Park. Number three, Catch Me If You Can. Number two is Schindler's List. And number one is Jaws.
Interesting choices. That very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah. Little different. Little some. Yes, makes sense. Others, well, not a whole lot, but it's what I like. So Jaws. I mean, I love Jaws, man. Jaws is such a good movie.
Okay, I just rewatched it a few weeks ago. So yes, big fan of it also. All right, excellent. So Nick, would you like for one final time this season to tell everyone where they can find Nick Rehack nine different times?
Nine different ways of finding me.
Nine times.
You can find me over at rabbitholepodcasts.com. Again, lyrical, I almost said nine times, lyrical innuendo, play MST for me. You can catch me over on the Exploding Helicopter podcast on occasion. And most recently, Mark Hoffmeyer invited me over to Movies, Films, and Flicks, and we've been discussing kitchen fights in films and giving them Michelin star ratings. So we currently have three films in the guide. We have The Raid 2, Sudden Death, as well as Halloween Ends. And we have a couple more in the pipeline. I think the newest one might drop around the time of this episode. I can't remember if he said it was going to be this or the next. So sooner than later, one will drop and we'll have a fourth entry into our Kitchen Fight Michelin Star Guide. So be sure to check all of that out and more nine times.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So I want to once again thank Nick for joining me. Always fun discussing these movies with you. I enjoy it a lot. I hope you do too. And more importantly, I hope everyone listening also enjoys our conversations, even if we have to say everything nine times in a row.
Nine times.
Nine times. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, nine times. Until then, earn this.
Earn this. In my solitude, you